Our next case is Duncan versus the Air Force. When you're ready, Mr. McNamara.
May it please the Court, Your Honor. This is a case that involves a legal sufficiency standard for evidence in a specific type of UCR case known as the Butterball claim. This claim was set forth by this Court in Butterball v. Department of Justice. To state a claim for a Butterball violation, an appellant bears the burden of proving by preponderant evidence that he was, one, charged military leave on a non-workday, and two, as a result, forced to use annual leave or another form of leave to fulfill his military obligations due to the premature exhaustion of military leave. Here, the appellant provided two forms of evidence which was sufficient to meet his burden.
Did he have his civilian records? I mean, the transcript was very confusing. He seemed to imply that he might have some, but that he'd never looked for them.
My understanding is that he did not have civilian records, which was what the agency was specifically looking for. He may have kept his own notes or personal notes as to how his leave was used. But in this case, the agency was the proper custodian of the records. The appellant asked the agency for the records, and in the respondent's appendix on page 66, the agency states the agency has no pertinent existing records for the appellant. And I would just respectfully draw your attention to Kirkendall v. Department of the Army, where this court held the agency's destruction of records, even if due to mere negligence, can support an adverse inference against the agency.
But didn't the board find that there was an alternative location where he could have made the request for those records and he didn't?
The board did suggest the National Records Center. It's common practice, though, for that agency to refer a request to the employing agency because the employing agency is the appropriate location for where those records would be.
Would you give me the appendix site again where he was told there were no records?
Response appendix page 66. There's a sworn statement.
Appendix page 66.
Respondent's appendix. As you can see on that page, the agency admits that they do not have existing records for the appellant. In this case, the board is imposing a higher burden of proof than preponderant evidence. They're telling me to pose a burden similar to clear and convincing evidence through adding an additional evidentiary requirement of civilian records for the appellant to meet its burden.
You want us to find that the board improperly overturned a demeanor-based credibility determination. Does it hurt you that the hearing was by phone in terms of the deference that should be given to the AJ's demeanor determinations, credibility determinations?
No, I do not believe so, because if you took a look at appellate's appendix page 16, which is the initial decision, the administrative judge explicitly notes that the agency did not dispute the appellant's credibility or the accuracy of his documentations, The agency merely said that the evidence was insufficient.
The administrative law judge mentioned that everybody knows that these civilian records are destroyed after 7 years, and yet there's that. Other than that reference, there's nothing else in the record that supports that conclusion. Is that a true statement?
I honestly don't know if they were destroyed or lost. It's my suspicion that they were destroyed. But I would respectfully point you to a prior precedent in this court, Pusilowski v. Department of Justice, that states where even where records are deficient or incomplete, the veteran is to be given the benefit of the doubt.
Now, the part of the decision says the appellant neither submitted time and attendance records nor attempted to obtain those records from the St. Louis, Missouri center that does house those records. Did you make any, did your client make any attempt to obtain those records from St. Louis?
We made a request to DFAS, Defense Finance and Accounting Services, which is where we received the records that we did
have. There's a National Personnel Records Center in St. Louis. Was there any attempt made to obtain records from there?
There was no attempt made. But it's common practice for that center to refer requests to the employing agency because the employing agency is the custodian.
Well, but until we have some kind of evidence of that in the record, your assertion that it's a common practice is pretty thin and one which this court can't rely on much, right?
Correct.
We would need to have had some attempt made and then some official record of the evidence.
That is correct.
I'd like to hear some argument on your that you have in your brief regarding the board abusing its discretion by reviewing the decision from the beginning.
Okay. The board, when faced with a petition for review, there's two criteria that must be met for the board to undertake review. Either one, the availability of new material evidence, or two, the decision was based on misinterpretation of law or regulation. In this case, neither one of those two criteria was met for the board to undertake review.
Do you view this provision as being exclusive? Exclusively mandatory, that there's no other grounds upon which the board may review a petition other than these two?
Based on prior decisions, one of those two criteria seems to have to be satisfied for them to undertake review. There is another regulation that allows it to take any decision in its own discretion, but here there's no indication that that was the basis for their review.
So you're saying that this grant of authority is also acts as a limitation on that authority?
Yes. I mean, the two regulations specifically state that one of the two criteria must be met.
But didn't we just say that that's not the case? I mean, haven't we said that that's not the case, that it does not act as any limit on the board's authority?
Yes.
Okay.
But the agency has cited a number of MSPB decisions to support their position. These have no precedential value in this court, and they don't stand for the proposition cited by the board. In all the cases, there was no hearing or sworn testimony before the administrative judge. It was all based on the written record. Additionally, in three out of those four cases, the agency had records to specifically rebut the appellant's claims. In the one case they didn't, Oblinas, the appellant had no recollection as to how the policy applied or how he was charged. It was based on his assumption that because other federal agencies had done it.
But this court only reviews the decision of the board.
Correct.
There's the ALJ's findings have no standing here other than the extent to which they're adopted by the board, right?
Right.
And the board did not adopt any findings here. So we have no findings to even review, do we?
Well, the board has to respect the credibility determinations of the administrative judge. And here there was no deference given to those findings.
The only findings we review are the findings of the board, right?
Correct.
So we're not, whether they themselves gave deference is not an issue that this court considers, is it?
Well, if it was an abuse of discretion for the board to not look at those,
if the board abuses its discretion, that's a pretty thin reed on which to rest an appeal, isn't it?
Abuse of discretion. Well, the board didn't even consider or cite any reference to any of the findings of the judge. That indicates, you know.
Was a transcript of the hearing before the administrative judge before the board?
In the petition for review, I'm trying to recall. They had the audio. I know for a fact they had the audio CD of the entire hearing, and they could review that, so they could listen and hear the exact testimony of what was said. But here, under Sheehan v. Department of the Navy, in the USERRA case, the appellant has the initial burden of proving by preponderance of the evidence that the military service was a substantial or motivating factor in the adverse employment action. The agency may then come forward with evidence to show, by a preponderance of the evidence, the employer would have taken the adverse action anyway for a valid reason. Here, the board is attempting to merge the appellant's initial burden with the agency's requirement to prove an affirmative defense. Namely, the appellant has to produce civilian records to contradict their own assertions and records because the agency doesn't have them. Once again, in Pusilowski v. Department of Justice, veterans are to be given the benefit of the doubt when records are incomplete or deficient. We not only had accurate records from Defense Finance Accounting Services with respect to the appellant's military service, but we also had the credible sworn testimony that was unrebutted, unequivocal, and it was not speculation. It was based on his own personal knowledge of his own experience during his employment at the agency and how his leave was charged. And he specifically testified as to the specific dates where he was required to use annual leave. And the agency did not dispute his credibility or the accuracy of his documentation.
But they did find very specifically that he had not submitted sufficient evidence to establish that he was required to use annual leave to fulfill his military obligations, right?
That was their finding, correct?
That's the one finding we have to review, right?
Right. Right, this court has a review of a question of law without deference to the board regarding the sufficiency of the evidence in this case. And the evidence provided, consisting of the records that he had available as well as his sworn testimony,
How is that a question of law?
Legal sufficiency? The legal sufficiency of the evidence is my
understanding. You're making a finding that he hasn't submitted evidence. How is that a legal justification? They're not interpreting some regulation. They're not interpreting some law.
Well, my understanding is legal sufficiency goes to whether evidence is sufficient as a matter of law to meet a burden in any circumstances.
That's what we call fact findings, whether you have facts.
Well, the board specifically said they were not going to consider...
Did they misinterpret some law or regulation? Can you show us that? Is there some law that says what they must do? Some obligation of the board?
In regards to reviewing...
That they have misapplied?
I'm not sure what you're referring to in terms of...
I don't think there is one. No, that would be a legal question if they had misapplied a law passed by Congress.
As I said, my understanding was that a sufficiency of the evidence is a legal question based on the cases I was able to find, such as the Walter v. Nicholson case. A challenge to legal sufficiency of evidence tests where the evidence in question as a matter of law is capable of meeting the applicable legal standard. And the board specifically stated they were not going to approach the weighing of the evidence arguments, only the sufficiency of the evidence argument.
Okay.
If there's no further questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Okay. Mr. Hoffman.
May it please the court. The issue before the court today is whether or not Mr. Duncan has met his burden by the preponderance of the evidence to show a USERRA violation. And in order to do so, he needs to be able to show, first, that he was in fact charged military leave on intervening non-work days, and second, that as a result of being charged intervening leave, being charged military leave on intervening non-work days, that he was in fact required to use some other type of leave, civilian leave, in order
we
to meet his military
the
obligations.
In fact, we understand where this sits. Can you deal with the record on page 66 of the appellant's brief?
Page 66.
The agency has no pertinent existing records for appellant.
Yes, Your Honor. As far as we believe, that's correct. If we believe the agency does not, in fact, have Mr. Duncan's records. The issue with that is that civilian agency records are only kept a certain amount of time, and based on those records, no longer existing, we can't know for certain, because it's very important to understand the distinction between the military side of this and then the civilian side of this, which is what petitioner is trying to do is come to the board with the DFAS records, military records, and then extrapolate from that what would happen on the civilian side.
But the administrative judge said everybody knows these things are destroyed after 7 years, and the problem is that our Butterbaugh decision didn't come out and at a point in time that it would allow some of these records to be kept in the normal course of business, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So you would agree that the documents don't exist?
I would agree that in this case, the Air Force is unaware of documents existing. However, I would also to the
point. What about the board's suggestion that he should have made an effort to obtain records from the National Personnel files in St. Louis?
Your Honor, it's our understanding that that is accurate, that he did not, in fact, make that attempt, but.
But you're not, you don't believe there would be any records there if he did?
Correct, Your Honor. Based on the timing of this, which I believe the dates covered are roughly between 1980 and 1998, we're sufficiently out from that period of time that unless Mr. Duncan has some civilian records on his own, it's unlikely that those records would be available through the civilian side of the Air Force.
But you think the error in that board's finding is irrelevant to this conclusion?
Which error would that be, Your Honor? I'm sorry.
That the board relied on the fact that he didn't go seek documents that everybody knows don't exist.
I don't read the board's decision as relying on that narrow ground for the basis of reaching his decision. What the board did is determine that even with the evidence that Mr. Duncan offered, which would be the DFAS records, and then essentially testimony that's extrapolated from those DFAS records, that is insufficient, and it has made numerous opinions and orders that have found exactly those types of evidence insufficient. And
let's then look at what else that the board was looking at. The administrative judge made credibility determinations. Would you agree that our decision in Leatherberry makes it absolutely clear that while we generally only review board findings that where we're talking about demeanor-based credibility determinations, the board must give deference to the AJ's findings?
Yes, Your Honor. I would.
And we reversed the board in that case on that ground, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. But I don't think that, I mean, my review of the Hillen case at the board would suggest that demeanor is just one part of a credibility determination and that there are numerous other factors, and that while the board may be tied to the demeanor findings of the administrative judge in the initial decision, I don't think those are dispositive necessarily with regards to credibility. And I think it's important to note.
But the board didn't find he wasn't credible. The board just.
Correct, Your Honor. The board didn't reach credibility. The board
just
did
laid
not
down a hard and fast rule that you have to have civilian records that don't exist.
Your Honor, I would not agree with that characterization of what the board has held. Now, there are cases. The board has certainly said that civilian records are sort of the holy grail. If you can come with civilian records, the Air Force is going to give you either correct the records or cut you a check for the time that you've spent. However, I think that if there were situations where someone had independent recollection and could testify to having had to use having military leave charged on weekends and then having to use annual leave, I think that there are decisions, specifically Oblin SV Department of the Air Force, that would suggest, because that decision states, the record indicates that the appellant has no independent recollection or documentary evidence that can specifically identify the dates the agency accurately and improperly charged him military leave. So I don't think the board has foreclosed completely the idea that an appellant can come to an administrative judge and with proper and sufficiently credible testimony say that, yes, I remember being charged military leave on intervening not work days, and here's the situation where I was charged annual leave. I don't think that testimony has been foreclosed. However, I do think that testimony that is based purely on extrapolations from the DFAS records, the military records that don't show the two crucial steps, the civilian leave being charged, and then the requirement to use annual leave after the 15 days of military leave has been exhausted. If you can't show that with the civilian records, then I think you have to have some independent recollection testimony.
Mr. Hoffman, with regard to Leatherbury that we discussed earlier, that was a case involving an intent to defraud. And so the board was trying to determine intent, and we did require deference to credibility determinations on intent. Would you give any weight to the difference between an intent determination and a outright finding of fact as to whether a condition existed? Were there records? Were there not records?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, I think that, an intent determination would seem to suggest that that demeanor would carry greater weight as opposed to the other aspects of a credibility determination. But I think something else that's important to note here with respect to how the board wound up where, or the full board wound up where it is that it's seen cases, it's had cases come before it. Haskins v. Department of the Navy is one, and Cobb v. Department of Defense is another, and there are likely others where claims have been made that I was charged military leave and had to use annual leave, and then when the civilian records were in fact produced because the agency had the records, it was determined that in fact, all the days that had been alleged were not charged for military leave. In Haskins, I believe it was 4 days that were alleged that were not correct, and then in Cobb, it was 6 days. So I don't think the board has just come to this conclusion.
But in those cases, there was no hearing, there was no testimony, right?
That's,
three out of the four of these cases, there was no hearing at all, not even a request for a hearing.
That's correct, Your Honor. But I think that the point is still valid that. The board has to make a decision here about what in fact is going to be sufficient in these situations where the civilian records can't be.
But what more would he have said? I mean, he said repeatedly that he does recall being forced to take annual leave, and there were very specific questions from the AJ with respect to that. And even when the questions were put to him by government's counsel, he did not hesitate. So what more would he have to say?
Well, I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor.
Could he have gotten a prior supervisor? Could he have gotten someone who kept records and knew the policy of the agency during his time to testify and corroborate his own? We're just going on his recollection, right?
Right, Your Honor. I mean, I think there's certainly the opportunity for him to bring other witnesses. I also think there's certainly the opportunity for him to tie his testimony to some other sort of event that would make it significant.
There were affidavits in those other four board decisions, weren't there? Some of them of this character, affidavits from prior supervisors or not.
I believe there were, Your Honor, but I also would somewhat disagree with.
So he's relying just on his recollection when he could have come up with a lot of better evidence.
Correct, Your Honor. He's relying on his recollection.
If we would reverse the board, we'd be giving an incentive for people to perhaps delay their claims past destruction of the date, and then on their own recollection, seek to reconstruct records that would have existed or to substitute for testimony they could acquire that would give us better evidence, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And I think that to some extent, I don't think that the testimony here is as clear-cut as it first appears. On the transcript at page 33, lines 33, line 13 to page 34, line 6, when Mr. Duncan was asked, do you remember taking annual leave on September 27, 1996? His answer was, yes, as good as anybody's memory can remember that long ago.
Well, that was after repeated questioning where he was very specific, and they kept asking him again and again. I mean, I read the whole transcript. That wasn't, you take that snippet, but in context, he was very specific before that.
Correct, Your Honor. He was very specific in response. I think it's very important to take it in context as well, Your Honor. He was very specific in response to very specific questions from counsel, and he was very specific in response after having had the opportunity review his DFAS records and review the calendars. And in fact, the petitioner concedes that Mr. Duncan's recollection is based upon the DFAS records. If you look at his closing argument on page 91 of the transcript, lines 16 to 18, he says, but the appellant's recollection is based on records obtained from DFAS.
These are only 6 days he had to remember. It's not like we're saying he had to remember years and years of activity. He had to remember six specific days that all fell on a weekend.
Correct, Your Honor. But, well, he not only has to remember that, Your Honor, he has to be able to testify to that, and then he also has to be able to testify. Well, actually, Your Honor.
How long ago was he supposed to remember what happened on a specific weekend?
Your Honor, his service was between 1980 and 1998.
How much money are we talking about here?
Your Honor, I can't give you a figure, but we are not talking about a lot of money.
So how many hoops does that have to
before
jump
before you in? Say that, though, how many cases are out there?
Lots, Your Honor. Very, very. Because essentially where we're...
We're deciding a case today that may result in 100, 1,000, how many other cases?
I would assume thousands, Your Honor.
I think it's over thousands.
Yes, Your Honor. Because what we're going to look at is exactly what happened here. Mr. Duncan's DFAS records were requested. Those are Air Force records. And then we go through the calendar extrapolations, the spreadsheet. The appellant presumably.
But the test is that anybody who makes a claim once the documents are destroyed, which, as the AJ said, they're all destroyed pretty much, well, anybody who makes that claim can't ever win.
I would disagree with you, Your Honor. I believe that if they've kept the civilian records themselves, they can win, obviously. And then also they can come to the board and they can provide testimony that demonstrates, has indicia of reliability and demonstrates...
Some corroboration, maybe that's supervisor.
Correct, Your Honor. Supervisor corroboration...
And he has to remember, by the way, not just the weekend day. He also has to remember the prior day when he was improperly charged military leave, right?
Well, he has a two-part process, Your Honor. He has to remember the weekends, and then he has to remember which years those weekends would have required him to go or would have caused him to go over his 15 days, and then he would have to remember, okay, I was required to take annual leave on this day in
because
order to satisfy...
Because of what happened on that weekend 6 months before.
Correct, Your Honor.
The problem I have with this case is that the Mr. Duncan showed up and testified. I mean, he was under cross-examination, and everybody was there asking him all sorts of questions, and he answered... From what I can tell, well, I mean, when he says, I can remember this as well as anybody else can. And then the board decides this case totally on another point and doesn't consider the fact that the administrative judge saw the demeanor of Mr. Duncan, you know, eyeballed him, and decides on sufficiency of the evidence. And yet, we can see from the record that a lot of the evidence that the board relied on and said that should have been here didn't even exist.
Again, Your Honor, what I would draw your attention to is the idea that while this case is distinguishable slightly in the fact that there was a hearing and that there were presumably demeanor bases made, I think what you need to keep in mind is that these cases have come before the board in other types of situations, again, the affidavit type situations, where someone has alleged days, you know, signed an affidavit saying, yes, this is what happened, and then the board finds out when the civilian records are in fact procured that is not the case.
That's why the demeanor-based credibility determinations are really important, aren't they?
I mean... No, I honestly would disagree with that, Your Honor, because I think in this situation, I'm quite certain, I am absolutely certain that Mr. Duncan believes he was improperly charged military leave on those days, or maybe he believes that was the policy and that the policy was followed. But there are multiple steps that need to occur from the DFAS records to it actually happening. He has to be, I see my time is up.
No, please. He has to show
that the civilian agency actually has to charge him the military leave, and there have been numerous demonstrations where that has not occurred, in commands where that has not occurred. And then second, he has to show that as a result of being charged that military leave, that he was required to take annual leave, which is, again, something that has to happen at the civilian agency. So I think that is the distinction.
Thank you. Mr. McNamara.
Just a few brief points, Your Honor. When you inquired as to the law that was violated here, the board violated USERRA, interpreting USERRA and the appellant's burden in proving his USERRA claim. The National Record Center was key to the board's finding in their decision, which was just heard by Respondent's counsel that wasn't, you know, of any use. Additionally, we were with respect to, you know, this concerning a lot of cases, the appellant still has the burden of proving his case and going forward. It's not, I don't, you know, that concern will still be considered in the fact that the appellant has to go through the steps of setting forth his claim, testifying if necessary, and proving his case. Also, once again, just to point out, as was stated by this court.
Why didn't he get someone from his employer to testify as to the practice of that employer?
If I recall correctly, all the supervisors were no longer alive, if I can recall correctly.
You could get a current, just anything that would corroborate his recollection, not only of one day, but of that day accumulating so that he has to take his own leave in order to fulfill his military obligation.
We did have a witness on our side testifying as how the records were used and how the leave would have been charged in that respect. We also had a witness for the agency who testified that there were inconsistencies and they didn't have personal knowledge of how Mr. Duncan's leave was charged. Mr. Duncan had personal knowledge and he testified to his habit. Whenever he had military obligations, he would use his military leave first. Then, when that was used up, he would have to use annual leave.
You said that the supervisors were dead?
Yeah, I believe they were no longer.
I thought the record showed that they had retired.
If I can recall, I thought they were no longer
and
alive
Michelle,
or available.
Michelle Richards?
She was one of our witnesses that testified as to the records, how they were interpreted, how they were received from DFAS, and how they identified periods of active duty on non-work days, and how they can show military obligations in each year.
Now, let me, she's not an Air Force employee, right?
That's correct.
But she helped Mr. Duncan compile the records that were submitted.
That is correct.
And she was available to testify.
That is correct. I see my time is up. If there's no further questions,
thank you, Mr. McNamara.
Thank you.